From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Brooke Gladstone is out this week. I'm Bob Garfield. On Thursday, barely a week after Turkish forces began to bombard Kurds in Syria, after a go-ahead and then a weird about-face from the American president, and after condemnation from the global community, Turkey at least agreed to temporarily relent.
Turkish side will pause Operation Peace Spring in order to allow for the withdrawal of YPG forces from the safe zone for 120 hours.
The Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces, who were our allies in the deadly struggle to rout ISIS from the region, have been given 5 days to abandon portions of what locals call Rojava, a semi-autonomous Kurdish state within a state. Though on Friday, journalists and SDF officials reported that shelling and gunfire continue. And so many Kurdish civilians have already fled Rojava, fearing the worst.
Just a few bags of essentials were all this family could carry as they ran from the fighting in northeastern Syria. There was shelling and fighting, this man says. My family hasn't slept for 4 days. We've left everything behind.
Last weekend, mere days into the Turkish operation, members of the press were also forced to evacuate. Among them was NPR international correspondent Daniel Estrin, whose team only a day before had gotten the network's approval to report from within Rojava. Daniel, welcome to OTM.
Thanks for having me.
We're speaking to you Friday afternoon, your time. You are in Duhok, Iraq, not far from the Syrian border. There have been reports that the Turkish forces or their proxies in Syria have not ceased firing. What are the refugees telling you?
Yeah, this is such a rapidly changing story. So as soon as we hang up, the story could go an entirely different direction. But yes, fire has not ceased. We're hearing from Kurdish medics inside Syria that Turkish airstrikes are continuing in one area, at least. We spoke with the spokesman of the main Turkish-backed force fighting in Syria, and he said the majority of fighting has ceased. There are some clashes in one area, but fighting is continuing in one area.
Now, you are, again, on the other side of the border. You did spend a little bit more than 1 day in Syria. Tell me about that foray.
Well, when all of this began, we flew to Erbil, Iraq, my producer, Lamel Aryan, and I. We drove to a town near the Syrian border, which is where I am now. And for the first few days, we went to the border crossing. We met some of the lucky few Syrians who actually could escape Syria to Iraq because they had Iraqi residency papers. So we heard their stories as they were crossing the border. We were calling Syrians inside northeast Syria on WhatsApp, and they would send us WhatsApp voice memos that we could play on the radio. All the while, we were deliberating about whether we'd go inside Syria.
Because for most news organizations, the days of just rushing headlong into a war zone are kind of over. There is much more caution exercised nowadays than in the past, no?
I think it does depend on the news organization. Certainly, my organization is much more careful on matters of security, and I think a lot of the big organizations are. I know of other freelancers especially and some other journalists who are still in Syria right now when most of the other journalists pulled out. Our main concern was Turkish shelling, which seems indiscriminate. There was shelling on the outskirts of the town that we were hoping to be based in, a town called Derek, which is about a 30-minute drive from the Iraqi side of the border. We finally did decide we could go there, that was a low-risk place to be, that it was a couple hours' drive away from the heavy fighting, and it was close enough to the Iraqi border crossing that we could drive out in a pinch if we felt that we needed to get out quick. And, you know, someone close to me told me the night before we went, you know, fine, take the risk, but is it worth the risk to give this appearance of access and on-the-ground knowledge without the real thing, without adding meaningfully to the story?
Why bother going into Syria just for the sake of saying you were in Syria if you're not in the thick of the action?
Yeah, that was the question that was posed to me, and I think it's a fair question. And I hope that we prove that doubt wrong. within 10 minutes of driving into Syria, we found people who told us their story. We saw a convoy of a couple pickup trucks on the side of the road. There were trucks with piles of colorful mattresses and carts of tomatoes and eggplants. And we pulled over and we met the patriarch of this family, about 20 people. They had been fleeing for 3 days and they weren't being allowed to cross into Iraq. They didn't have the right papers to do so. The patriarch of the family, a 70-year-old man, told me that his sons were still stuck in a city that was being heavily bombarded and couldn't get out. And he started to cry and he wiped his tears away with a scarf on his head. And those are the kinds of stories that I wanted my listeners to hear.
At some point, however, the decision was made, not necessarily by you, that it was time to go. What happened?
Things changed rapidly when we were there. The Syrian Kurdish forces struck a deal with the Syrian regime because the U.S. was pulling out its troops. And so the Kurdish forces invited the Syrian government regime to come in and help them fend off a Turkish invasion. And so suddenly we were faced with an entirely different risk. If at first we were afraid of Turkish shelling, we were suddenly looking at the possibility of the Syrian government regime coming to the area where we were and taking over the border crossing. We had entered Syria with Syrian Kurdish permission and not permission from the Syrian regime. If the regime got a hold of us, we were afraid of a one-way ticket to a Damascus prison. So that's why we made the decision on the ground to get out quickly. It was about 12:45 in the afternoon when one of our security consultants working with us said he had heard from his colleague that the Syrian regime was set to take over the border crossing at 3 p.m. So we rushed out. I guess I should say that until now, the Syrian regime has not taken that border crossing, but we were watching Syrian government forces advancing quite quickly. And so we and I think nearly all other journalists in Syria at that time made the decision to get out.
We have spent the last 8 years noting how difficult it has been for journalists to get in to Syria to report on the brutality there of the Assad regime and the civil war, and the difficulty of local journalists getting the story. Is there any benefit to being where you are on the Iraqi side of the border? What are you getting from there that you might not have been able to get had you still been in country?
Well, for instance, we're getting the other side of the story, which is that more and more Syrians are fleeing and they're becoming legitimate refugees, leaving their country, not just displaced within their country, but crossing a border and seeking safety inside Iraq. We were driving on a highway yesterday and we saw a convoy of many shuttle buses at night with, you look in the windows and you see men, women, children, their faces look exhausted. And the buses are marked International Organization for Migration, which is connected to the UN. These are people seeking shelter. It's not an easy task to cross the Iraqi border. A lot of them drove a very circuitous route and went through a border that's not usually used for people. So you get a sense of the trickle that could turn into a deluge of refugees. And you're also poised in case something changes and you can quickly get to the border and cross into Syria if you think it's safe. And that's exactly what's happening now. Because of this declared ceasefire, just speaking to journalists staying at the hotel where I'm at, they're saying that they are planning on entering this weekend.
How does NPR balance the danger of reporting with the urgency of being a witness to what takes place?
I think you said it. It's a balance. We continue to be here on the border, ready to enter if we deem it safe enough, but we continue to aggressively report stories. The reporting doesn't stop, even if we're not on the ground. And the hope is that we'll be able to get back in.
Daniel, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Daniel Estrin is an international correspondent for NPR. He spoke with us from Duhok, Iraq. Coming up, in the story of American betrayal of the Kurds, is hidden another tragedy, the possible obliteration of a fledgling democratic society. This is On the Media.